It's time, right about that time, for a perfectly cromulent episode of PZ85 Plays The Curse of Strahd on the PZ85 Network. I am your Game Master, Cody Sandusky, here to, probably tell you that it's Turbo Time with our illustrious cast of characters here, starting from my back and to the left. He is over on the left coast playing Bjorn the Bloodhunter. It is Kaz.
Look. 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 Look.
Above me in our broken Brady Bunch screen here, he is somewhere relatively north of me in the state of Missouri. He is playing Rasmus Thomason, our very innocent Steve Rogers half-elf cleric. It is Double H.
Cody, has this ever happened to you?
Yes, several times, I'm sure. Haven't even made it through yet, I'm sure.
I was waiting on the Homer Simpson. Yes, once.
Playing our air genasi, Zephra, it is Lindsay Wolfgang.
My room is being invaded by cats, and I need to take care of this.
Whilst she takes care of that, we are going to take care of the primary character in the opening section of this session. It is Aiden Valmont, and whatever illustrious secondary character may come into the play in the near future.
Maybe.
It's the commandant of PZ85 and hater of technology, Shannon Young.
I am also a ground genasi.
So you're a graveler in the Pokemon world.
Oh shit, is that a real thing? A ground genasi?
I highly doubt it, but it was the first ground Pokemon I could think of.
Okay.
There are earth genasis, right?
I'm pretty sure there's air, fire, earth, and water, right?
I think it's a good band. The benders, it's the avatar thing, right?
Ground genasi. Does that mean that you're prairie dogging all the time?
Genasi does. Technically, I guess.
I'm a were prairie.
Were prayer.
Help.
That's just Lindsay. Do that one more time. That cat up there. Yeah, there we go.
Hunter said it's a safe distance. Cat. I'm safe from the cat, but I can enjoy the vision of the cats.
I'm trying to take a.
She
a
looks like a
so
real kitty now.
Send it to Sarah.
She's showing this cat off like we're all like how good it will taste.
There we go.
That's good. You say that, I had a YouTube short come across my timeline last night when I was trying to go to sleep that I'll explain it later, but I had a similar vein to that where it did end up with here's a rabbit. Okay,
Bjorn
here's my
cat
meal.
Bjorn thinks that cat looks delishable.
Yeah, it's gonna be it's gonna eat. It's gonna
what
eat
are you,
good.
Alf?
Sure.
Yes.
Nom. Cody, can I say something real quick before we start the show? Really quick.
Yeah, probably.
I just want to, if the audio on this sounds weird, if there's any weirdness to this, I apologize. I'm working on a new setup, new equipment, and I did not get, I did not have enough time to work all the bugs out. So if anything goes wrong, I apologize ahead of time, and we'll have it worked out before tomorrow, which is important, but that's all.
What Shannon's telling you is that he didn't do shit.
I didn't do fucking shit. I didn't do this.
And if they have a problem with it, they should call Spectrum and tell them, I'm not worried about it.
How do you like us now? They said that to me at a dinner.
Shannon, you have a new audio you're going to be adding to the soundboard soon, correctly? Correct?
I do.
Yes.
I do. And
no.
I'll be debuting it this Thursday on an all new After Dark.
I will not be on.
She will. Don't let her fool you. She'll definitely be there.
Don't let her lie to you.
She'll definitely be there.
I don't want to hear that as a soundboard clip.
Oh, you won't hear it. I'll make sure it's muted for you.
Fine.
Nothing can go wrong with this.
Nothing
I'm
can
sorry.
Go wrong with this. This is the way.
Everything is fine. Okay. In our 1 week hiatus for last week's holiday, whatever you want to call it, boom boom extravaganza 2023, whatever.
I can't change more names right now.
Yeah. I was gonna try to bait you on one, but that's not gonna work. Yeah. Anyway, so in lieu of our 1 week hiatus last week, we are coming back into view as our characters or our players will be seeing in Roll 20. Figured it was about time I gave you a view of what you're looking at. This is the vineyard that you've been working your way through. It's not the entire view, obviously, of the fence line, but this kind of sees you coming through, arrow pointing to the south on this map, because I didn't want to bother flipping it, is where you're going into the home area, the actual winery itself. So that is where our characters have been. All save for one, who took a ride on an ethereal horse during that last session, one Aiden Valmont.
Yes.
Aiden, it's been a day so far, in the most literal sense possible, but also probably in the most tiring way possible. Pivot back a little bit. In a little bit, I think I'll send you a map of Rovia and kind of show you where you've been going in proportion to where you've been heading. You've had to cross a few streams, I'd say kind of creeks. You've been traveling through wooded areas, though. And as Aiden has been traveling, especially as you get closer to evening right now, it's almost as if the world is trying to deter you from where you're going. Not enough to discourage you, I would imagine, especially after how you left the rest of the party after the incident with the Mardukovs and Danica specifically. But you feel, as you go through the woods, you're starting to reach more of a rocky area. I'd say plateauish. Kind of like you're going toward the west part of Missouri, I guess, if you want to describe that. It's almost as if everything is trying to dissuade you, but not enough to outright kill you yet.
Well, that's good. Being outright killed is not something that I intended to do. Not outright.
No, that's suboptimal.
Yeah.
So far in your journey, again, nothing you haven't encountered before or aren't capable of handling. You've had a swarm of bats come your way. Going through the wooded area, you've had to take out a couple of blights, you know, kind of free imp-like creatures. As you kind of get through more of the wooded area and get toward this more rocky mountainous region, you have in the horizon... Now, it's not anywhere close yet, but you are starting to see the castle that you've been told about in the distance. You're aware that you've kind of cleared through your initial hurdle and you're getting toward what you would like to go to.
Can we legally play here the music that plays whenever the Belmont walks up to the gate to Castle Dracula, and you know, it goes that little do 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 do, and
probably
then
probably not
until we reboot. Anything's on the table.
That's true. I can do whatever I want. You want.
For now, do whatever you want.
And then as I start my journey, it goes bum 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 bum.
It's a lawsuit because Konami likes pachinko.
They don't know about us, and they're too stupid to realize it. Keep making your sex
pachinko machines.
Yeah, keep making your sex chinko machines there, Konami.
Okay.
I don't like the way that sounded after I said it.
Yeah, I didn't either. It sounds like a slur.
It sounds like a slur, and I apologize.
I'll let you hammer that out the editing.
No, it's not. It's not. No.
It's not.
Thank you.
I prefer not. I mean, you could start playing that music. I would say thematically it's probably a little early. You could guesstimate from this point you still have probably a day's journey to get where you're going.
Okay, hold off on the copyrighted music then. Okay.
Yeah. But as you make your way through, you're kind of... It's unfamiliar terrain, so I'll let you. Are you taking it slowly? Have you abandoned all regard or just kind of full speed ahead? How are you handling this entire... off the beaten path, literally, pursuit toward your destination?
In my head, the way that it would have gone is, as I got, you know, he's riding his horse, and as he gets closer and closer to his destination and things become hairier and hairier, you know, at some point, it's kind of like Kaz and Hunter, it's kind of like Diablo. At some point, I jumped off the horse and started swinging my whip around and smacking things. At that point...
Are you spinning to win?
He spins that whip real well, and we're talking, like Cody said, blights, maybe a skeleton or two, any kind of undead that has been sent his way to kind of test him. For reasons he doesn't know. He doesn't know if he's being toyed with. He doesn't know if he's actually making progress. This is very much up in the air, but he also doesn't care. He's thrown caution to the wind. And at first, it was very much he was working his way through the woods, like kind of quietly trying to sneak through. But after being attacked, you know, left and right, and he's defended himself, whip and dagger in hand. At that point, he's back on his horse, and he is just galloping through the countryside, just steel heart and soul and eyes, just, you know, focused on that castle and what lies within.
Okay. That is what you can do. You may... Let's see if I can drag you all into it. I'm going to drag you over to a temporary battle map.
Oh, drag me, Lord.
A chired. That's all a chired. You started that. Which I know is not what he sounds like all the time, but it's the way I interpret it in my head.
That's the best version of that I've heard. That a chired. That's a chired. A chired.
Yeah, I've always said it with an R because for whatever reason that's how I hear Peter McNichol saying it. It's not accurate, I'm aware.
It's not Peter McNichol, it's Janosch.
I must say it is Janosch Poa and his vaguely Eastern European accent.
Well, I gotta ask you, where the hell are you from?
And if memory serves correct, he provide an answer.
Now he says the Upper West Side.
Oh, that's true.
What does it matter? You are like buzzing of flies to him.
He is Vigo. Anyway.
Slime him.
Two down right. On the ground. Yeah.
So many rhyming bits in that movie.
It's a good movie.
It is a good movie. So what we're going to do here, just a quick and dirty battle map. We're going to pick up in mid-combat in this situation for you.
Okay.
You have yet again been impeded again. This is not the first small wave, as it were, of skeletons or anything that have encountered your path.
Right.
But you're a little worn down. I won't take any demerits off of hit points because so far you've been dispatching them without much issue. But you're getting toward the end of a day. You're probably more than anything just tired of dealing with this, whether it be just different entities, the hangups that you've caught trying to get through the wooded area. These are like the buzzing of flies to you.
I need a fresh pot.
Yeah, but they are flies nonetheless that you must address.
Fresh pot. Fresh
pot. Dave Roll special.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a good video. Ooh, that's audio.
I'll let you go ahead. Let's do just a quick and dirty roll for initiative, Shannon. Just kind of, I'll give you advantage on it even.
Thank you. I got a 19. I don't. Well, 20 with my plus one. I don't think I need to roll again, but I'll roll again just to see.
Yeah, I mean, there's no.
No harm.
Yeah, there's no mechanical.
Oh, it was almost a nat 20. It was almost a nat 20, and it rolled at the last second to a 9. So I'm gonna keep that dirty 20.
Okay. Okay. Well, suffice to say, you're going first. Let me go ahead and. Oh, why you're not letting me add things to the turn order, you dill hole.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
The first thing I want to do is kill the three skeletons.
Great. roll for death.
So judging from the things that are on here, legitimate question. For those that can't see, there is a skeleton with a sword and shield. There's one that's crawling, appears to be, and he has no legs, Lieutenant Dan. And then there's one with a bow and arrow. Is that accurate? That is what those three actually are, or is that just art assets?
Yes, that is what they are meant to be. One of them thus far, for all three of these, to kind of rewind maybe a couple of rounds of combat, as it were, these are entities that just kind of made their way out of... like nearby, a nearby cavern as you've been traveling through, almost as if there was some effort for these soldiers to make their way to their destination and either were lost in transit and just lost to the hills or just died up here.
Gotcha. I assume there's no reasoning with them, though.
No. At this juncture, these three have seemed, you know, your first round of combat. I'll kind of give you a little bit of heads up. Clearly with the blue one, you've had some mechanical ability to take away its legs. It's okay. Still desiring to kill you, but it's certainly a speed. So, you know, you've succeeded in that respect. But no, there's no reasoning. There's no intelligent conversation with these three. It's very much you are a thing, and they want you to no longer be a thing.
All right, well, let's start the party off real quick. And
all right.
It's been a while, so I got to remember exactly how I do things. Because I remember I had some ability that I could make my weapon holy, if I remember correctly.
This is correct.
Yes, but is that a free action or is that an action? What is it?
I believe that's why I'm taking a look at your features and traits because I think
it is an action.
Divinity.
Yeah, as an action, okay. You imbue a weapon with positive energy. Yep. I feel I'm gonna skip that for now. Oh, go ahead.
I was gonna say let's just go ahead and apply it as if you had. You've been doing some combat for a couple rounds, and also the fact that you've had to do this a couple times today.
Right. Okay. I want to that guy with the bow. Now, mm-hmm. Hunter and I are aware from and a cast too from playing Diablo that the bow enemies suck the most because they will wipe you out in one shot.
Oh yeah, those are snipers.
Yeah. So I would actually like to try something I've never done before. I want to use my turn the unholy on that guy.
Okay.
So as an action, you can censure fiends and undead. Each, and I'm assuming this is undead. I'm assuming, right?
Yes.
Okay. Each fiend or undead that can see or hear you within 30 feet must make a wisdom saving roll, DC 13. On failure, it is turned for 1 minute or until it takes damage.
Okay. So let me make a wisdom saving throw.
Also, as a question real quick, when it says it's turned, does that mean it fights on my side or it just doesn't attack me?
I mean, Turn the Unholy is a spell I haven't seen before, but I can find out very quickly.
If for what it's worth, while you're looking, if it works like my Turn Undead, like the Cleric's Turn Undead, mm-hmm. you literally turn them away from you. Like they
run full speed, yeah.
To move away from you. Basically, you're putting the fear of God into them, and they take off.
Yeah.
A turned creature must spend its turn trying to move as far away from you as it can, and it can't willingly move to a space within 30 feet of you. It also can't take reactions. Its action can only use dash or try to escape from an effect that prevents it from moving. If there's nowhere to move, it can use dodge. So basically, you're trying to cause it to
scare it away. Yeah, I'm just trying to scare it away. Yeah.
All right, we could certainly give that a run. Let me...
And for the record, Aiden is tired. He's sweating. He's got a little blood on his forehead just from all the battles he's endured so far by himself.
Yeah.
Born. And
that's your own fault.
He is but he's determined. He's determined.
Okay. I will tell you this plainly. That these things aren't very wise. But at least this one's wise enough to get the hell away from you. Turn the Undead is successful. Very much so.
I'd like to. I don't know how that would. Other than he uses the spell, is it? I don't know. How does that work? Is it words? Does he snap his fingers? Like how does that usually work?
It kind of comes up to player interpretation how you want to do it. Because if you're channeling divinity, it would be speaking to your deity, or at least invoking whatever your allegiances are toward.
Considering,
do you have a holy symbol?
I think so. Yeah, hold on. What would that
be in your inventory?
Inventory?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I have a scroll of pedigree.
You should. I'm thinking anyway.
Emblem. Yeah,
emblem. I have an emblem.
Like an emblem or something like that. So, like so that means it's probably part of your gear.
I'm assuming I could. I know there's no Christian beliefs here, but I think a crucifix is. Some manner of crucifix emblem, like something fashioned like it. He would hold it out with his hand and just kind of speak his words. And as that monster turns around and starts to flee, he just kind of sighs a sigh of relief to himself because it's one last monster he has to kill in what feels like a boss rush mode currently for him.
What languages do you speak other than common?
I speak...
Oh, Celestial Infernal. God, I forgot about
there
that.
There you go. So I was going to say, if you have something cool, then it could be, since you don't want to come up with, I'm sure you don't want to come up with words for it on the fly, it could be that you speak it in kind of their language. Like, you get on their level and scare the hell out of them.
Yeah.
Would Infernal count for undead?
It, the language...
Sure.
Yeah.
I don't know that it does, but I think that's Cody's call.
I'll just say, as written, a skeleton understands all languages spoken in life, but it can't speak. I'm just going to go ahead and invoke the thought process that if you speak to something in Infernal, it's probably going to turn and run anyway.
Yeah, he probably
just... doesn't understand that, but it knows that you're a problem.
That's yeah. I'm trying to think of a big scary man saying something to you and scaring you away. But literally the first three people I could think of were Mike Tyson, Bobby Lashley, and Brock Lesnar. None of which have a voice that invokes fear.
No,
not great.
So basically Aiden showed that, you know, he turned that holy symbol to that creature and went, "Hey man, once you get on out of here, stop bugging me." But he did it in Infernal.
It did it in Infernal, and you know what? It worked. It's going to use its full action to flee.
And then as a free action, once he flees, I'm going to look at the other two, especially the one crawling, and just kind of give him the rock, you know, summon him, like, come get some. Bonesy. Okay. Yeah.
And that's it for me. There you go. Yeah, it is, for what it's worth, it's turned for 1 minute or until it takes damage. So, it's got a while to run. You're good.
I hope it doesn't fucking trip and hit its head on a rock. That would suck.
I think you'll be okay. All right, so that is the extent of your turn. Blue being at half speed, again, we're kind of generically working here. It's not going to make it to you, but you can tell that you're speaking to it. Invoking it has, you know, encouraged it to try as it might further. So it is, it's making its way toward you. Red is not going to be as encumbered by, you know, a lack of legs. So it will make its full move to come toward you. It is going to try. It is, as you look in the depiction, it has scraps of armor. Like, it doesn't have a full set. It's not anything that's going to actually help it. You see, like, a plate on its shoulder. You see a generic iron helmet. I wouldn't even say for that character the shield is in its arm. It might not even have that arm at this point. But enough to where it's, whatever it died in and rotted in, it still has a couple of things left over. It is going to try to swing that short sword at you. That is not going to hit. I can tell you that right now. So, as tired as you may be, it seems that in the combination between your chainmail and your deft ability with your whip, it's not going to come near striking you in that situation. So okay. We come back to you.
I will, since the red's right up on me, I'm going to go ahead and take a swing at my whip at him.
Okay. Go ahead and give me a damage roll.
I just got to remember how to do that real quick. Oh, there it is. It's been a while, man. That is a 22 to hit.
Yeah, that's going to hit. Give me some damage.
That is a 14.
Wait, that's whip to hit. Your damage roll is not that. Yours is a 1d4 plus 5. Yep.
Damn it, I'm sorry.
You're good.
It's a 6 instead. You know, I'll keep the 14. No.
I get that. Yeah. With your imbued whip, how do you do it?
If I have my way, you know, when he swings at me, Aiden kind of does a spin. He dodges by spinning around, and as he comes back around, he swings that whip around its head and just literally just yanks the head clean off the backbone.
Okay. You do so, and it's, if anything, controlling it just kind of crumbles out to the ground. The bones are still intact, but it collapses.
And then as another free action, I'm going to look down at the one still crawling and just shake my head and say, you know, we don't have to do this. Is there any part of you that's still in there, or there's not, is there? Can you give me a growl if you understand what I'm saying?
I mean, you're speaking in common. It gives you, again, because it's D&D, he doesn't have any muscles or vocal cords to do this, but you get generally a feeling or something vague that it's still coming for you. mind you, green has taken its leave fully. I'm not going to drag it off the map all the way, but it's
he's making those Carbot barbarian noises.
Rawr, 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 rawr.
There you go. Yeah, so blue is going to continue to encroach. Again, with its lack of legs, it's not going to make it to you, but it is within the 10 feet for you to do anything.
I'm going to step around it and keep going. No,
that is something you can do if you want to, because I think between that and your ethereal steed, it ain't catching up.
If Aiden considers leaving, he sees it, but he kind of feels, honestly, in a rare moment, he almost feels bad for it, because here's this creature that is, you know, clearly, you know, in some kind of eternal torture, and he ain't got no legs. So he's going to, if I could, I don't know how I would do this. I don't know if it's like just a basic physical roll or what, but just walk up to it and literally just step on its head. Resident Evil style.
I'd consider that an unarmed strike, but go ahead and give me a roll.
Okay.
It's the same plus six as your whip.
That is a 21.
Yeah. And with four bludgeoning damage, that's enough. Yeah, it's just a flat four.
Yeah.
It's not a dyke roll, it's just a flat four, but yeah, gotcha. You absolutely do that.
All right. And he does, in channeling his best Rasmus, because Rasmus has rubbed off on him a little bit, he kind of says a little prayer before he does it and says sorry and just smashy smashy.
Heal the boot right through the cranium. No real resistance.
Then he looks at the one fleeing and thinks about it and thinks, he's better off. I'm sure he's going to find a good life. At that point, Aiden looks back at the castle, sees it off in the distance, watches the skeleton that he has named Sven, by the way. That's Sven. Sven's leaving.
Okay. Sven is fleeing. Okay.
He looks at the castle, wipes the sweat and kind of blood off his brow, and says to himself, you know, gets himself ready to continue his journey, and says under his breath, I hope the others are doing better than I am. And then he continues, and then he just starts walking towards the castle, whip in hand.
One thing I want for you to do, go ahead and give me, I'm trying to remember which save this is, to be honest with you. So give me a generic D20 save. Oh, wisdom, excuse me, it's a wisdom save. Okay, there it is.
Uh,
21. Okay.
Rolling pretty good on this small little journey.
Don't jinx yourself.
I don't like Cody's smile.
You specifically hear a voice. It's one you've heard relatively recently.
Oh, no.
And not audibly in the air, more so like in your head. You know this is a suicide mission. You understand that you have entered my domain. While I may be unable to escape, while this may be my hell, as you would call it, know that it will be yours as well, especially if you persist in this foolish endeavor.
Aiden says out loud, I don't know if that's in my head, if I'm crazy, or you're speaking to me somehow, but if you can hear me, if you can hear the words coming out of my mouth right now, fuck you. But he says it in D&D language.
I mean, common, I'm sure, has fuck you. I think you're fine.
And then he smirks and he keeps on walking.
Okay. Yeah, you don't hear any response.
Actually, as he's walking, he just continues to talk to himself. Nothing, as he's stomping through the mud, nothing is going to deter me from coming into that castle and shoving this whip straight up your vampire ass after what you took from me and took from all these people. And why is there so much goddamn mud? As he keeps walking.
That's not good.
Okay. Who added that?
Not it. Kaz, I didn't even know that was a button.
Looking at you here.
I love that it's named Not Good Krusty.
I'd like to think that's Strahd's reaction as he sees Aiden continuing to march toward his castle. Just, ugh, this,
that's not good.
This fucking guy.
Okay. So, we shall leave Aiden for the time being there. But Aiden, I would imagine this is to let you know that he knows you're on the way.
As a insight to the character of Aiden Valmont, as things will come to light in the future, I think the listeners will understand why he is so determined, and he knows it's a suicide mission. But you know, after everything he's seen, after everything he's lost, after everybody he's lost, and all the and what just happened that he blames himself for, there's nothing that's going to deter him from trying. He doesn't even think he's going to succeed, but he's going to try.
Okay.
And thank you, Cody. That was fun.
All right. You're very welcome. I'm glad to see Aiden back. And again, as we've noted in the past, this is not the last time we'll hear from Aiden. Clearly, he's doing something right as he continues his pursuit toward one Castle Ravenloft.
He's got those
what
sweet
he may
rolls.
Find there. We, huh?
He's got those sweet rolls right now, so.
Yeah.
Ain't no stopping him. Well.
Nah. Cue rest of song. So we pivot back from the entry on the way to Castle Ravenloft to the vineyard of the Wizard of Wines. The remaining portions of the party have found their way through, at least thus far, through the twig blights and the needle blights that have been patrolling the land with the help of Muriel and the help of the Mardukovs. Zephra, Bjorn, and Rasmus have made their way to an entrance of this facility. But when last we left you, Bjorn, with a mixed success trying to make his way to the doors, the entrance of this building, or at least the one that they've made their way toward, had drawn the attention of a few of the Needle Blights. So, we stand in a bit of a mixed situation here. Let me throw the map where I want you all to be. So, kind of laying the land there.
So, location-wise, how far away are they from, like, the door where we are standing? Where I am?
Ballpark 45, 50 feet. Like, they're making their way through, or making their way toward you, as it were.
Okay. So, they're, and then their line of sight is how far?
60.
Gotcha.
Yeah, so if we were to pivot back briefly to that other map, you know, just ballparking it, I would say as you guys are entering just beyond where this image cuts off is where I'll show you on that Wizard of Wines map I had for just a second. These are probably at the edge of the vineyard right around this area. And just the sound kind of caught their attention and start making their way toward you all.
And is it daytime, nighttime? I can't remember.
If I remember correctly, we were late evening.
Late evening, so
or at least mid afternoon, and the work you've been doing is probably going to put you closer. I guess early evening probably be accurate, maybe about 5 o'clock.
Okay, so not quite sundown then.
No, not yet. But these entities, the Needle Blights, based upon the knowledge rolls that we had last time, they only have 60 feet of view of vision. Everything else is, you know, pitch black to them. So mechanically, on this map that we have, you all are about here. Again, the shutters, the doors. At this point, I'll kind of paint the image for you. There are multiple sets of doors. There's probably one here, and one here to take you into this building from this vantage point, because this is where the road would come up. And that's where the shutters have been closed. The doors are seemingly chained, or at least kind of held together from the outside, as that's what you guys were finding as a lock on the outside of that situation. So, needle blight's coming your way. Bjorn, because you drew the attention, I'll go ahead and let you be the first to determine how you'd like to react.
Yeah, so if I'm near the edge of that house, is there space for me to just kind of like tuck it down and just kind of creep around the corner?
Yeah. I gave you kind of, we're doing Fog of War right now on the map. I kind of gave you the vantage point of what you would be able to see while you were approaching coming from
the vineyard
up. So yeah, it's kind of the outskirts of the building that you can see.
So I'm over on this side where I'm pinging?
Yeah, where you're pinging right now. You guys are about there.
Yeah. And the blights are coming from, I'm assuming, north on this?
Yes.
Okay. So yeah, if I, my intention would be, you know, piss on the door. I'll let, what's his son handle that? And I'm going to creep down and around the corner here, kind of like looking for, I guess that's a whale. Is that a whale?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm just looking for some cover.
Okay. Then go ahead and give me a stealth roll.
Stealth and stealthiness. Let me figure out where my mouse went. Stealth. Here it comes. Twenty-three.
Okay.
I'm a stealthy, skeletally son of a bitch.
Yeah, because these things are so far, or relatively far out for their vantage point now, you have the ability to maneuver pretty deftly, so I'll let you paint the picture. How are you kind of making your way around the building, and do you go toward the well? Do you go toward this other building? Like, what are you planning to maneuver here?
Yeah, I do like the old school kind of like 1980s like action star thing, MacGyverish, and I get around the corner, I tuck, and I like dive and roll, okay. And get myself over to the like where this well is at, and I'm just kind of finding cover because I want to still be near the front so I can hear. Mm-hmm. Like where the other group is, I'm assuming we were all kind of aiming for the same direction, or did everybody go?
No, it's seemingly like everybody kind of scattered. It's not on this map, but the way I presented it verbally is kind of like there's a covered awning where there's barrels and things as if they were shipping, getting ready to be staged out.
Okay. And just out of curiosity, is this like a porta pooper, like an outdoor, like an outhouse thing?
From where you're looking right now, it's what it looks like. Yeah.
Okay.
Like now that you're kind of pressed up against the well, that's.
Yeah. Yeah. Boy, I don't want to go in that thing, but at the same time, I also want to be very safe. So, yep, into the pooper thing I go.
Okay. The well, for what it's worth, it's a standard what you picture as a fantasy well, tight fitting stones, kind of covered in moss on the top. You had about a 6-foot clearance from the ground. So you pivot your way back. You get toward the outhouse door. It doesn't smell as bad as you expected. You kind of, as you come up on it real quickly, you see on the eaves on the outside, kind of some herbs that are hung outside of it. Something to help the smell, you assume.
Yeah.
Kind of ramshackle. It's a wooden outhouse. It's got the small crescent moon carved into the door. You pop in. It's a shitter.
Nothing in there. Interest. It's a shitter. Okay. Yeah. I'm just mostly using this area as cover. That's kind of my primary goal.
Yeah. So,
not necessarily so inside. I'm just like in this general area because I wasn't sure how tall the well was. You said it was 6 foot tall.
Yeah, it would have been about 6 feet off the ground, so you would have had time or a place to crouch if you were going to make a stand.
Well, I was thinking like something. Okay,
you have to remember this is a vineyard. There's got to be some mechanics. It's a 40. If you were to look down, it's like a 40-50 foot well going down. So like this is.
Yeah, damn. Okay. But what you're saying, it's the actual
base. Yeah, the wall coming up would have been, I'd ballpark about 5 to 6, if you include like the awning with the.
Oh, okay, yeah, shit. If that's the case, then I'm not going in the thing. I'm just kind of like using this space as a blocker. Yep. So that's my situation.
And so far, you're able to do so deftly. There's no issue. There's no attention being drawn your way right now.
Yeah. I'm kind of hoping that. Yeah, never mind. Go ahead.
Okay, no, go for it.
I'm kind of hoping that in the process of this, like the attention is still drawn. I've gotten out of the way of their attention necessarily, but not to say that they're still not, I'm assuming they're still coming this direction. So hopefully, again, I don't know where Rasmus and all those are, but I'm kind of hoping that kind of drew their attention away from the group so they can kind of like make their way towards something else.
Okay. For the rest of you, Rasmus and Zephra, again, not depicted on the map, you guys would have been kind of behind these barrels or this little shallow short wall in front of the steps going up to this awning and the entrances to this part of the building. So you have cover. If you peek, you can kind of see that the blights are surveying for what was there, because as we noted a moment ago, Bjorn was kind of standing at the door or kind of getting to her, trying to see if you can get in. So they're still generally coming this way, but you can see they're kind of, they're fairly mindless, you know, barely sentient beings. So they're kind of doing that awkward pivot, the Vinny Vega thing from Pulp Fiction. They're holding the needles, just kind of, where'd it go? Gesture vaguely toward area. Yeah. So they currently are still slightly focused on these entrances, but their target specifically is gone. So you can see at this point they're kind of meandering, but they are staying relatively nearby, enough to where they could see if they needed to.
Yeah, I'm not planning on moving unless it's absolutely necessary, because I am not particularly stealthy and I'm going to be very loud.
Okay.
So unless I get the idea that they're coming my direction, I'm not taking any movement.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm kind of in the same boat myself, but I will very slowly get my crossbow in my hand, so in case we do need to fight, I have it.
Okay.
Let's see. If they're going to be, if they're kind of like posted up and they're kind of stuck, it sounds like, I'm assuming they're kind of here where I'm beeping, or at least off the map.
Kind Are you talking about the blights or the rest of the party?
Rest of the party. I'm trying to figure out how
they're probably closer to like this area, kind of where this grass goes. I would, you know, ballpark 5 to 10 feet.
Yeah, gotcha. So we were closer. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So this is where I'm kind of, I want to get the attention off of them since I'm further away. I want to draw the blights away. So I ready. Let's see. I'm assuming there's like buildings over kind of like west of us. Anywhere close?
Yeah, there's somewhere like, as you come up to here, you see the majority of the winery itself is housed in this building. You would have some outer buildings, kind of like a storage facility for like old barrels. You have some out air buildings, kind of a vague barn lean-to thing for wildlife, things like that. Yeah.
So I'm looking at, I'm trying to see if there's some, I want to shoot my crossbow off into the, like near this building here, towards like, if there's any like barrels or loose items, metal items or something, I want to shoot it off into that area, that to that space. Sorry.
I mean, if you were going to aim it toward the lean to, or kind of like that little shelter, I mean, you could probably just aim for the broad side of it.
Okay. Yeah. I on the map, I can't tell.
There's nothing. We're using Theater of the Mind for that part of the map.
Perfect. That's where I'm aiming for. So yeah. And my range, for what it's worth, is up to 320 feet. Looks like.
Oh yeah. You're good.
Yeah. So I send off a bolt to try and make as much racket off west as possible.
Yeah. Just give me, and not for the attack portion, but let's go ahead and just give me a roll for your bow.
Just a D20 normal.
Yeah. Just make sure nothing too untoward happens with the attempt.
Yeah. Nope. Hold on. Let me figure out what I'm doing.
I'm so glad y'all embrace the like typing in commands and roll 20. As someone who works in IT, I don't have enough confidence in myself to be able to type commands correctly.
Oh, it's all good. Ooh. Son of a bitch. Well, 10.
I mean, with your modifier on your crossbow, yeah, you have a +9, so it's a 19. Yeah. And again, it's not like you're hitting a moving target or a sentient entity. You're aiming toward a building.
Right.
So
right.
Yeah, you're able to do so.
You hit the broadside of a fucking barn. Oh, there, no, never mind.
And you hit the broadside of a fucking barn for what it's worth. You succeeded in that endeavor.
Cool. That's so yeah, I was aiming.
And you hear what you would expect hitting a wooden target. You hear the it thuds against that wall, and you shoot true enough. You're capable. It buries the arrowhead into the side of the building, but it causes that noise as well for the needle blights to. You don't see it yet. For the rest of the party, you see kind of a shift of the five or six that were coming near again to the west of this map. Like they're one, they heard that. They don't see it, but they heard something, and it's enough for these things to start going that way.
Success.
Good job.
So with the movement speed of, you know, 30 feet, you can imagine in about 15, 20 seconds, these things are out of vision for you all.
Perfect.
So as it stands, there is no immediate threat to the party.
And with that, I'm gonna still kind of stay buried over in this area, but listening mm-hmm. for the party up front, just kind of like, I'm gonna be up near this so I can kind of get a line of sight either way. Yep. Watching those blights, making sure they don't end up like veering back to the crew. And mm-hmm. that's where I'm just gonna kind of chill for a bit and just kind of watch over.
Yeah. For what it's worth from your perspective, Bjorn, you also see, I mean, you're fairly nearby. You see these steps go up into the building. Now, the door is closed. You don't know what the status of the door is beyond that, but you do see their steps into a side entrance into this facility.
Yeah, I'm not going to try and open that door or knock on it. I'm going to get an axe handle in my head.
Okay, that's fine. That's fine. Just want to let you know that it is there.
Yeah. I figure they'll come and get me if they make their way in.
So, Zephra and Rasmus, if you all continue to maintain your stationary positions, at least in the short term, as those needle blights start to pivot, it doesn't take long. Like, to the point where it's almost not outside of the range of sight yet, if you're kind of guesstimating how far they are, that Muriel pivots behind you to the door and just starts kind of messing with the lock. You hear her muttering something about, nope, not again, not right now, gotta go. It takes a couple tries, but she is able to successfully, you hear a click and the opening of the latch of that lock on the outside. As she kind of whispers to you all, like, successfully, the needle blights are out of distance, still moving toward that barn. She's like, "Get away inside, let's go."
Clank, 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 clank.
Yeah, yep. I will follow for sure.
There's no being quiet. I'll keep my head down and I'll crouch and all that, but it's
yeah.
He's like holding his sides.
Trying to grip the chainmail close to your body. He's
holding himself.
Think quiet thoughts.
Don't know what you can do.
We need a Rasmus blanket.
Well, all right, hang on.
That's going to be a thing.
I'm running out of names to change here, man. How can I get rid of a classic like Sprunge?
That's a good one.
Sprunge.
Ooh, okay, so we're in... Oh, y'all are into the dining room? What is that? Is that tables or... Oh, no, this is a winery, so that's where the people do the feet thing with the grapes.
The feet thing with the
grapes. Someone's remembering I Love Lucy.
Oh, I was just thinking about that YouTube video. Oh. That newscaster.
Yep, I was about to say that's the one I was thinking of, too.
Oh, man.
As it was said, as you guys come into this kind of veranda area, there are 3 5-foot diameter wooden tubs that are kind of up on, you would have a little ladder behind them, kind of coming up to the side. So they're on a little bit of platforms. You, I think, can ascertain what they are based upon the descriptions they've been given. On the back part of this room, there is a large set of sliding wooden doors, and there's also a normal-sized wooden door to the side. The entire area, it's a standard building. It's an aged building, but it looks as though it has been taken care of well. It's stone pillars and arches supporting what would be the floor above you.
It's unoccupied.
Currently, it is unoccupied.
Okay, so it's just us and Muriel.
Yes. Well, yeah, you two, Muriel, Danica, and Erwin have also kind of come in behind you all. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm going to let them take the lead because this is their family, so.
Yeah, but their family doesn't like them very much.
I was about to say, as you say that, Erwin coming into the building says, decade. Boy. You get the vibe that it's uncomfortable memories, and the fact he hasn't seen anybody almost makes it worse so far. He is uncomfy. But at this point, any port in a storm and all that jazz. So as you come in, the sliding doors, if you approach them, are the same situation. They are chained lock from the outside, but the other door, and I actually, forgive me for not showing that in fog of war, let me give you a little bit further here. give you that wooden door on the side. That door is barred, like, as you rattle it, or if someone were like, do something, you feel it braced from the other side.
That door right there?
Sorry, let me pivot back. No, this door here. Oh, the door that you're focused on, that's the, like, double sliding doors there chained from the outside. So where you're at. Well, where they're at.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, even though I know that Erwin doesn't exactly want to lead the discussion or anything, I will make note to him that, I mean, I know it's hard being back here, but you know this place better than any of us. You're going to have to lead us through here.
He kind of grimaces and kind of grits his teeth at that statement and says, either me or Muriel. Honestly, he looks over at Muriel. And you can tell, for the first time, she seemed very happy-go-lucky, or at least maybe reckless to this whole scenario and your encounters with her so far. You could tell a slight exasperation on her, as if she's a little annoyed, but she does indeed do that. She goes up to the lock and does give it another couple of attempts to pick it. She does have thieves' tools, if anyone's looking. She is fairly capable with those. As both that and this happens, mechanically, she is also performing a skill checks on these, by the way. And she is able to, in both, without much issue, get the lock off, slide off the chain, and start to pull the doors open. As those doors open, however, you see on the other side of you, for those of you in the room, let me get this going. You see a wide open room, but you also see a pair of crossbows pointed right in your direction.
Understandably so.
On initial reaction, how do the two of you react? Before anybody else goes, how do you two feel about this one?
The two of who?
Rasmus and Zephra.
Us.
Oh. I thought he was in there too.
No, at least as it stands, unless he's pivoted otherwise, Bjorn is still outside.
Oh, okay. I misunderstood that.
I'm chilling out here. I launched that bolt to get the blights away from you, so I'm still chilling near the shitter.
To see if they're okay. And so the door opens, crossbows directly in our faces, what you're saying?
Yep.
I mean, by instinct, because I can't get my shield up that fast, I'm going to put my hands up. Assuming I can't see what's on the other side of them, I'm just going to, you know, universal sign of surrender, because I know that we're not here to fight these people.
I'd kind of in the same boat. I'd put my hands up, but I'd also be like, we're here to help. Don't shoot us.
You two do that. Behind those crossbows are younger people than you would have expected. They look like they're in their maybe early mid-teens. As you look at them, you throw your hands up, you see behind those crossbows are a couple of smiles, smirks, as they pull them down slightly. Well, at least somebody has some sense around here. They pull them down as a reaction. You get Muriel, you get that feeling from her. She has no time for this. She is not happy with this at all. And she kind of snarls at the two young boys. Vigo, Martin, they're with us. Also, your uncle's here. Maybe don't shoot other ravens.
I, Rasmus is not one for comedy, but I feel like it would be remiss if he didn't add in, like, quietly, or, like, you know, just non-blights. It don't have to be ravens. Don't shoot other things, too.
The two of them, the older looking, again, they both look in their mid-teens, but one of them does, is a little taller, a little broader than the other, starts to lower the crossbow and mentions, "We've been holed up for a little while. You're a stranger. You have to understand."
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Completely. Yes. Yeah. Absolutely. I don't know. I got nothing.
No, it's okay. It's okay. Muriel gestures to them. Martin, Vigo, you know your uncle and aunt. And she kind of points. Zephra, Rasmus, they're with us.
I kind of nod at them when she points me out.
Yeah, Rasmus would, as typically is the case, would extend his hand to shake their hands.
They look at you. The crossbows are at their side, but they're not. See, think angsty teenagers right now. They're not terribly fussed and kind of maybe give you that curt nod.
Yeah. Yeah, I get it. He doesn't know shit about that.
Yeah.
He doesn't know shit about fuck when it comes to kids.
Yeah, so they give you that curt nod as if kind of to say, all right, old man, whatever. Zephra, in your situation, they're not terribly turned away. They're non-fussed about a blue person.
It's all good.
Yeah. Not that it takes much to put two and two together, but if they know their family members and everything, strange things are not new.
I was going to say, they're different. I doubt they're going to be phased.
Erwin looks at the two of them and says, "My God, it's been a while. Where's your father?" Introductions later. They look and say that a father should be back soon. We hope. He's made his way surveying toward Yesterhill. Muriel, that takes a moment to look at the rest of you and just say, okay. Wish he hadn't done that, but okay. Yesterhill is from whence it seems these attacks are coming. As she points to Erwin and Danica, as they know, the Gulthius tree is there. That's where we suspect the blights are coming from. Probably some druids as well. And maybe one of the gems that were taken from the land.
So we need to go head into battle, is what you're saying.
She kind of wide-eyes looks at you and says, that's a strong assumption, seeing as the Keepers of the Feather, or what is left of us currently in this area, is pinned down in our home.
Yeah, but when you say the main person in charge is out there and you hope they'll be back soon, that's not exactly a very reassuring bit on fixing what you guys need fixed.
Maybe not, but that's where, and she gets kind of cut off, as coming from the back part of this room, these double doors in the back and right portion of the room come open. An older man, a bit hunched over, being assisted by a cane, but barks out, "Be that as it may, unwelcome assistance is not necessary." For those of you standing nearby, Erwin, you very quickly see an eye roll, a sigh. "Hello, Father." He makes mention that as he comes around the corner, because this is large, it kind of gave you the vision. This is the fermentation room. So there's deeper, taller vats. Like everything you just saw in the previous room is far, far more involved at this portion. Takes up a lot more of the room. It smells very potently like wine, or at least grapes. You see kind of the barrels around the back part of the room. You're in the heart of the operation. And it takes a few strides, but coming around the corner is one elder. I'd say elderly. It may be a little too strong of a phrase, but a gentleman who is certainly not as spry as he once was. But he's getting there. I would equate, for those of you that have watched it, maybe a closer visage for him would be a slightly hobbled Mr. Filch from Harry Potter.
Okay.
And that's currently, in terms of a visage, probably also an attitude, at least the way it's been, you know, scathed from across the room, safety be damned, so far. He comes through, he meets you all where you are, which is on the inside of these doors, and Muriel quickly kind of scrambles to get out of the scenario, but also to close those doors, and kind of calls out in a elevated whisper, "You understand there are things outside, right?" Davian makes his way around the corner and looks at her and says, "Young woman, I'm painfully aware that my family's generational work is under attack, and yet I give not a damn about anything like that. They know we're here. Alerting them to our presence makes no difference." He doesn't look at Erwin. He looks at the two of you, Rasmus and Zephra. Outsiders. Dare I ask, you know what we are?
We do, because they have aided us in our need, and in turn, we wish to help you guys out in your need.
Stands there. Yo, go ahead.
Sorry, out of curiosity, is there any like windows or anything on the side over here? Is it mostly just blocked off? Sorry, with the fog of war, I couldn't tell.
No, as it stands, I can go ahead and expose a little bit more since you're out there. It is walled off in this area. I would say the staircase that goes up, or at least this pillar on the outside, it has some window view there. But at least from where you're at, it's pretty blocked off still.
Okay. So, okay. Trying to get a, like, seeing if I can get a peek in there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
At least, I would say the door to this room that you are kind of faced up again right now, there would be not a peephole, like a peep door, but it looks like it's made of iron, but it also is closed from this perspective.
Gotcha.
So there's a means, but not currently.
Right. To piggyback on Zephyr's thing before he responds, I mean, I would probably say, Rasmus would probably say something to the effect of, you know, with all due respect, we're not just outsiders here, we're outsiders in Barovia. Not to get too deep into things, but we don't even really know how we came to be here. But these people, your son and his wife, are the kindest people we've met in our short time here. We owe them, and therefore we owe you.
Kindness. Sharing the generational secret of a group that has tried to stealthily, under the radar, monitor the movements of the devil and bring some brightness to this land, all under the guise of a vineyard. Yeah, kindness. Great. Okay.
For what it's worth, they didn't reveal themselves to us in a moment of kindness. They did that in a moment of weakness. We brought, and he stopped short of saying that he brought, it's not Irina. It is Irina. Mm-hmm. Nope. It is. I keep getting my names mixed up.
Yeah. Danica. Yeah.
Damn it. I've got it right in front of me. I just couldn't get it pulled up fast enough. He stopped short of saying he brought Danica back to life and says, well, you know, we helped them in a time of need. They didn't reveal themselves willingly. And we have no one with which to share your secret.
At least you don't for now. May it stay that way. Mind you, in this entire conversation, he is yet to even bring his gaze to Erwin. Like, it's true. It's as if he and almost by proxy Danica don't exist. He looks at you, but will say, are there any more of you that know this secret? Are there any more of you that are here?
Outside of here.
I'm going to give Zephyr a look and say, without saying, you know, I guess there's no need to bring Aiden into this. So, without saying that aloud, I would just say we have one more outside. He just withdrew some of the needle blights away from your compound here.
A temporary kindness for you to gain shelter. In fairness, some with a lack of self-preservation may do the same. It's a very icy feeling, this entire thing. You don't feel welcome. Sure. You know, Erwin surely isn't welcome. Vigo and Martin, the two younger lads that Muriel called out, they've kind of, for a moment, were leaning against that back wall, kind of letting all of this take place. But you notice that they have kind of snuck through the double door since they're no longer locked. And they're kind of out of sight right now. They close them behind them, but they're kind of out of sight.
Yeah.
Which pivots back to Bjorn. What are you?
Yeah, at this point, like, I'm kind of at the mercy of the situation. I'm pretty much hoping that I have uniquely put trust in the two that got in. I'm assuming I know that they got in.
You haven't heard anything in a couple minutes, neither from Needle Blights or anybody else, so.
And do I see any Needle Blights near?
No, the ones that went to investigate the barn. You would have seen that as they approached the barn, they discharged a few of their needles, but they would have shot them toward where that arrow was.
Okay, so they're plenty far away.
Yeah, at this point, other than doing that and approaching and noticing that there wasn't anything there other than an arrow, they just kind of worked their way back toward the vineyard. From what we've established, as all of you are aware, they are, of their own volition, needle blights are not intelligent. They're barely intelligent creatures.
So from this point over here, like, I'm just going to, like, in a way where it keeps the sound as low as possible, I'm just kind of, like, scratching on or kind of, like, just tapping that door. Not knocking or anything, but just tapping that somebody is on the other side. If I don't get any response, then perhaps I can come around the front and see if they maybe left that door open. Because I'm kind of feeling left out here now. So now I need to figure out how I need to get in.
I'll give you, after about 30, 40 seconds, scratching on that door on the side isn't getting any response.
Okay. So, yeah, I buzz around to the front to see if the door still is, if anybody's up there, or if there's any unlocked or anything like that.
Currently, you are able to open that one of the doors. I would say the one that's nearest to you, where everybody was kind of gathered. It's not locked anymore. You see the lock is no longer physically present on the outside.
Cool. I just walk in and I show that I'm unarmed just by lifting my coat.
Okay. All right.
Not touching my weapons, keeping them at my sides. But also making sure that I puff myself out, make myself look bigger than I am so I can.
Okay, you do that. It does. I mean, I would say you probably make it to where the pedestals are on these vats or these crests.
Yep.
You now see two raven-haired young men, you know, teenagers with crossbows pointed your way. So you kind of splay out jacket full, you know, as you described. You kind of hear one of them just vaguely or faintly say, kind of cool. And the other one, maybe a little bit more confidently, are you with the others?
Yes. Where did you see them pass through?
Behind the double doors. Don't worry, you'll hear them.
Okay. I walk on by, a little maybe, perhaps too confident as far as still with a crossbow pointed at me, but I just pay it no mind, as if they're just kind of like these baby birds, and just roll by them.
Okay. At that perspective, the younger of the two, the one that kind of muttered, that's kind of cool. He does loosely keeps the crossbow trained on you. It's not like he's ready to shoot. It's more just a general pivot as he sees you go to the door. The other one is going to skitter around the far side of the vats or the barrels and is going to address that door.
Yeah. I walk by slowly, just kind of eyeballing them, just like making sure that there's, you know, no funny business.
Yeah. Nobody's coming back. I'll say that.
I enter carefully through the door that they had pointed out. I guess that's the door. Yeah.
Yeah, it'd be the door still kind of, yeah, the double doors are the ones that are unlocked. You just kind of gingerly opening up, you throwing open the doors, like, how are you?
No. I just kind of casually open it up. Not too much. I don't want to, like, startle anybody.
You come in midstream of this old man's ranting. You just hear, as you come to the door, Irwin, I've still provided you wine. I've still taken care of this land. Your brother Adrian is far more responsible, and yet you come here with people who know what we are, and this is what's going to happen.
Yep. And at this point, I'm sensing there's tension, and I'm sensing he's angry and upset about, like, the people that's come in. And I kind of look around and go, so y'all are living just blockaded in here?
Oh, he turns to look at you again, a little hunched over, kind of pivots on that cane and looks at you and says, oh, good, another one. And the worst looking of the bunch. This one doesn't even look like a human, Irwin. How the hell does he blend in?
Yeah, this entire group, there's one of us that can blend in. Thank you.
and even still, and he just reaches up and, like, tips the top of his ears. He is a half elf. I don't know if you got.
No, it's true.
Yeah. And as this is going on, I kind of look at him. I was like, regardless of what we look like, it seems that you are either stuck in here or in need of help. I don't see anybody else coming.
There's something to be said about gift horses and their mouths, you know.
The old man just looks down at the cane. Yeah. I'm sure you've been told already the history of this land, at least enough, because clearly secrets don't matter anymore. This whole place is a gift horse. Perhaps I've looked it in the mouth too long, but it does not mean that I'm happy about outsiders who apparently don't even know Barovia being here to help or to hinder. We don't know.
And I'll be honest right back at you that I'm not happy about being here in the first place.
Right.
In some cases, it may be better that we don't know about it.
Yeah, there's not nobody here that seems quite happy about any of this. But the situation seems to be advantageous for us all to stick together. You need help. We need help. Let's help each other.
He said what I was going to say. Daraz was just going to go, yeah. As a matter of fact, he's a little taken aback. Didn't expect that from his buddy here. So he just yeah.
Like, I spent a little bit too long near the old shitter out there. Now I'm a little pissed off. Want to get something.
I guess I could tack on. Look. Sorry, I can't unhear it.
I knew it. I knew it as soon as you said it.
You may not think very highly of your son or his wife or anything like that right now, but they know what we're capable of. We know you are in need. We're also in need, as my compatriot said. this gets us nowhere. We don't have to like each other. But we
don't
do
worry
have
about
to
that.
Find each other. We're here now. There's no taking it back.
You either accept the help or we open the doors.
Yeah, the only way the only way out of any of this is through it.
Seems your future has two paths, one shorter than the other.
Great. A bunch of young foreign folks telling me what age and years and life has to do with anything. He forces down that cane, kind of gives us a quick rap on the stone floor. Fine. Muriel elbows whichever one of you is closest, probably Zephra, and kind of says, he won't say thank you, but it's probably the closest you're going to get.
That's fine. No thanks are needed. I kind of whisper back to her.
Not here for a thanks.
By the way, Irina is here with us for all of this, right?
Yes.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, you tell she's made herself very small in the situation. She's not.
Right. Yeah, no, that's fair. I get that. She knows better than we do that this is all very, like, we're giving off strong main character energy right now, for better or worse.
And she's trying very much not to do that by any means possible.
Right. Well, she's lived here. Again, she knows the lay of the land. We don't, but we don't really have much other choice.
Yeah.
Options are limited.
Okay, so with any indication from, because Rasmus is a negotiator. This is what he does, right? With any indication of a fine, like we're in, immediately he's going to move to, great, tell me everything that we need to know about this place. Everything we need to do to either defend it or cut a path through it to get to where we need to go.
Ideally,
he goes into planning mode immediately.
Yeah, and Bjorn, I'm assuming I'm nearby here and kind of like, and I add to this.
Yeah,
like,
you're assuming in the fray at this point. Everybody is in this fermentation room, so you're all fair game.
So as he's asking about like the lay of the land, I'm also like, and information on the threat that we face, if they happen to know it. I'm assuming that they know it, we don't.
He looks at you, and again, to all of you in the room that are not Erwin and Danica, he's kind of just treating them, and by proxy, Irina, because Irina's kind of kept her distance, maybe behind them in hopes that she's not noticed. If he's not looking that way, she's attentive enough to know that that's fine. She can hang out in the shadows. He, again, kind of grits his teeth. About a month ago, from what we can tell. Well, I'll bear in mind, I'm sure my son, or loose-lipped Muriel here, has given you into the loose history of the Wizard of Wines. Three gems, long ago, multiple generations, land made fertile, here we are. Thanks to the efforts of my least favorite son, the first gem was stolen about a decade ago. About a month or so ago, we started hearing stories as we travel throughout the area and through doing our work that the forest folk were starting to act strangely. A Muriel kind of pipes in, just briefly say, druids, blights, things like that. He quickly kind of picks back up, started acting strangely. We heard from hunters in other areas kind of coming toward these foliage woods that something was amiss. About 3 weeks ago, we noticed, after a few days, we believe, that the second gem was stolen. No witnesses. Part of the vineyard started withering. Fruit bearing become less prominent. We have initial beliefs that either it's in Yesterhill or Berez, but the bogs of Berez are not somewhere we wish to go idly. That's not safe, even for us. What you have encountered, the patrol, the blights, the forest folk encroaching the land started about a week ago. Despite my advanced years, I still know my way around a crossbow and a bolt or two, but my eldest son, Adrian, his sons, Vigo and Martin, they have taken up, along with others, and he kind of nods his head, even after the comment he made a moment or two ago, nods his head toward Muriel. Others have helped work, keep us safe. But the numbers are increasing. And despite our efforts, about 5 days ago, the third gym was taken. We've been holed up here. The Blights, over the last few nights, have seemed more confident trying to encroach and breach this building. Our home. We have so far been resolute, though it's likely not for long. Even I am willing enough to admit that.
Sounds to me that there would be benefit to assisting you in clearing the land.
At this juncture, without the gems, the land be damned. The land is fruitless without them. Clearing it would be important, but it's still dead land at that point.
You say you're convinced that the second gem is either in... Sorry, I wrote it down. Yesterhill or Berez. But you also said that there were no clues as to who took it or how. How then do you know where it might be?
Yesterhill houses many a forest folk and many an entity that is not hospitable to our presence here. It's a shrine to the mountain fane. And there may be even more malicious entities housed there. That's what we have ascertained. He says the word ascertained, but then pauses and thinks. It is what some keepers of the feather have been able to fly and find. Through much risk, they have surveyed the land and where the movements of these forest folks are moving. And it's currently where it could be. Berez houses an evil witch who has long wanted the death of this land, or at least what has made it fruitful, and if our deaths have been necessary, so be it. Hence my suspicion about there.
Then what of the third gem? You just said it was taken, but not any details as to how or where it might be. Is it then likely the same as the second?
We know the third gem is in Yesterhill. We know because we fought trying to keep it here.
Okay. So then it stands to reason, and at this point, I'm just going to turn and address this to the two of you while kind of, you know, scanning the room. Stands to reason, then we make our way to Yesterhill if we can maybe kill two birds with one stone. He stops himself. Sorry. Whoa. If we can maybe solve problems. That was real, by the way.
As I didn't play coming out,
I said it and I was like,
as Rasmus is saying that, I'm near enough. I just kind of like nudge him in the side, or rather, in his arm.
Solve two problems with one bird. No, no, I'm not gonna tear it full comedy. Anyway, no, he legitimately says the first part, takes the elbow nudge, goes, solve two problems in one move. If they're both there, we get them both back.
As he finishes it, Bjorn, yes, for the first time at probably ever, kind of snickers a little bit at his kind of jumbling of words.
He doesn't fuck up very often, but when he does, it's worth it.
Yeah, it's absolutely. And it's like the first time y'all have ever seen like Bjorn kind of like crack a little bit of a.
Um. So, I mean, basically he's waiting on confirmation for that to be amenable. It's an upward eyebrow to Davian, yes?
I, out of character, just be sure. Are you talking to us two or them two?
I addressed it to you, but then I'm going to turn it back to him.
Yeah, I am absolutely on board.
Allow us to find out what Adrian finds. I warn you, Yester Hill is a name. It's not descriptive of what it is. And Muriel almost, like, non-verbally kind of looks at you all and does the whole thing.
Okay.
I like situations escalating.
You take it both ways if you want. Situation escalating. Zephra nailed it. It's more it's less a hill.
Oh, it's a mountainous situation.
Yeah, more of a mountain than a molehill, both literally and figuratively.
I may be skeletal, but I'm nimble.
And then, I mean, the second question / situation would be, and I know this is broad because if he can figure it out, it would have already been done, but we're going to have to cut a path out of here, right? I mean, you guys have had people leaving, but you've been flying in and out. That's obviously not going to be an option for us.
And Muriel's quick to say, not without risk either. It's been, the skies are not safe. Sure.
Yeah. What do you know about Needle Blights? Like, what do we... Is there anything we can do in assistance that you couldn't before, now that we're here? Anything specific that you know that they're weak to, that they're distracted by, that we can use to at least get through them, if not around them? Most things are flammable. Well, but it's a valid question.
If they're wood people or something, then they're extra flammable.
Erwin wood pops up for the first time in a little bit.
Shannon says mud people. Is that like these mud races? These are a bunch of wood races? Is that what it is?
Erwin pipes up for the first time since being chewed by his father and says, fire is purifying, but also not great for dead land. It's just a thought.
Yeah. A worthy note. And I mean, Rasmus will give him that. That's kind of what he does. He wants everybody to feel involved. So, yeah.
Yeah, okay. And Davian is quick to point out, yes, I'll be damned. I'll die in a cold, hard ground before you set fire to my vineyard.
Not the plan. We don't want you dead soon.
Yet.
So then what can we do? You've been going up and over them, and that's risky enough in and of itself. They're like sight. We learned that through our own knowledge, right? We knew that they couldn't see very far.
Yeah, you know that they are 60 feet.
Like, okay.
That's all they have.
So sounds I'm going to be like,
we could kite them in some way if there's a heavier artillery, ranged artillery option nearby, beyond just crossbows. Do you have cannons?
Or we can move under the cover of night. Night's already going to reduce a level of vision, and if they can't see very far in the daytime, they sure as hell can't see very far at night.
Unless they got night vision.
If they can only see 60 feet in the day, I'd be shocked if they had night vision.
Perhaps they're overly sensitive and the sun hurts their eye, their retinas.
Do we know this, Cody? Can we?
I'm going to say, based upon what Muriel will chime in and tell you, and just generally, it seems like this is known by the others pretty offhand. 60 feet's all they have. At all times.
Day and night, no difference.
Mechanically, I'll tell you that Needle Blights have blind sight of 60 feet, which is generally like they can't physically see in the traditional sense, but yeah, they are aware. Figures. Yeah, well, they're aware within 60 feet by way of like sound and heightened senses.
Almost.
Right. And you would think with Needle Blights, it'd be literally like they're imbued with like an ability to detect the ground in
ground,
some respect.
The earth and all that. So that explains also why it's been easier for them to fly out of here because they're not touching
the ground. Yeah, what if we just like attack, like what if the plan, a strategy, this is Bjorn just kind of proposing, an attack from above and above, meaning we can attack them from while you, feathery folk do that thing in the sky, dropping what have you on them. We can be on the roof line and attack them from above up there.
I hate it.
Draw them to us, and then we can stay out of their
Or for that matter, if you want to take, if there's too many just to fight them all, if we just need to get a party out, we can send some up as a distraction who don't have to leave. They just have to go up and get their attention and then circle back while we leave. Are there horses? Well, of course there's not. Well, they have to have horses, right? Because they're pulling carts of wine. Hell, we had horses. We came in on horses.
Yeah, I'd say y'all have a couple. They're at the perimeter of the property, but you have them.
Right.
As long as they haven't been stolen or eaten.
Well,
they eat horses, don't they? That was a movie.
Tasty steaks. No,
shoot them. Anyway. Horse steak. Horse.
Perhaps they need adhesive.
As you all continue this planning, you hear a bit of a ruckus up above you.
I'm sorry, before you finish that thought, I gotta get this out of my system. I know Shannon's listening. Shannon, please do me a favor and subtitle this episode, Perhaps They Need Adhesive. Anyway, go ahead.
That's a major 10-4 there, Double H.
Shannon popping in as the producer. There was a sound upstairs, Cody. Please.
You hear a ruckus above you, and everybody's attention pivots up, even the two boys who have re-entered the room at this juncture because everything is locked up from the outside, pivot up and kind of point up. You all hear kind of a scrambling coming through from upstairs.
Well, who the hell
and then
here?
You see these double doors throw open.
Hopefully it's brother.
You see a slightly wounded, very haggard man come through. And he approaches the party, and all he says for right now, it's worse than we feared. There's... The Needle Blights are being led. It's an army.
Son of a bitch.
That's where we cut it off. Shit.
We need bombs of some type.
Always with the bombs.
What I'm hearing is Bjorn is going to set fire to the countryside, and that's what this problem solves.
Well, it won't be me. I have no fire magic, so.
I'm going to rename him to Trogdor. He's burninating the countryside.
Burninating all the people. Burninating all the blights.
And their thatch-roofed wineries.
I feel like
true winery.
As that happened, like for what it's worth, as he walks in and he says the army has come, blah blah blah, Bjorn just reaches down at like the nearest glass of sort and just dips it into the wine thing here and just guzzles.
And then says, "Cowabunga, it is."
No, I would like it to be known. I'm just gonna throw a little blurb of text above here. The DM will remember this.
Oh, their wine.
Nice. Nice.
What are the
shit? I had a
mechanical penalties are for being drunk.
I mean, also those vats have got to be huge. I don't think you can just reach in.
I mean, I'm also going to make a point just to kind of let you know a little bit. Things haven't been great right now, so you probably don't know what the condition of whatever is in the vats is. So,
this is true. Have you seen my stomach? I can handle shit.
Yes, we've all seen your stomach many times.
We've all seen most of you.
We see it 17 times an episode.
Oh, my God.
You just exposed your stomach to two teenagers this episode, you fucking weirdo.
Hey, they thought it was cool.
Yes, one of them did.
One of them thought it was cool.
Yes, once.
All right, so teenage boy aside, because it translates in all universes and all languages that weird shit is cool. That wraps up this episode of PZ85 Plays the Curse of Strahd in your Podzilla 1985 network. When we return, as things go, hopefully next week, one group is learning word of an army. One person is trying to be a one-man army against the Lord of the Land.
Yeah.
Not that I'm going to let you guys in on too much, but I don't think I really need to sugarcoat it. Things are going to get a bit dice heavy and a bit hairy in the next couple goes.
Hey, you said when we you said when we started this, get those extra characters ready. It's coming to fruition. And you know what? You know what Aiden's going to say to Strahd the moment he sees him? He's going to say, it's Alabunga. Turbo time!
How do you like us now?
That's what I was waiting on.
I can't hear Hunter, though.
Can't hear you, Hunter.
I can see him cursing, though.
I didn't hear that, I saw that. He doesn't know why. It's fine.
We can see your lips moving, but there's no sound coming out.
It's okay. Don't worry. Shannon's going to roll up on Strahd and just go.
Dummy. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh,
so what's coming up on the week here?
I can't imagine the curse words Hunter is saying because Hunter, wanted to talk about this with me. But tomorrow, we're excited to announce the start of an all-new show that we don't have an official name for yet. Hunter and I have both been workshopping some things. But it's a very cool concept where we talk about films. We're going to pick one movie, and every week we're going to talk about it. We're going to talk about the history of it. We're going to talk about what we think of it, dissect it, and then we're going to talk about what
Can I talk about it now?
Oh, hey, whoa.
I have no idea what the fuck that was. Yes, that's all. That's stuff that we're going to do for sure. So, for the record, because Shannon's too humble to give himself credit for this, it was his idea. The initial idea was we were going to talk about... Wait a minute, now I'm hearing myself. Who's that? It's fine, whatever.
It's fine.
The original idea was mainly just we wanted to talk about Evil Dead Rise. Shannon.
Evil Dead Rise.
Wanted to talk about what happened not only in the movie but after the credits, and that was at the time the idea for the name of the show. And I don't know that it won't be the name of the show, especially the first episode. But yeah, it continues to evolve. And as of earlier, we were talking about, I've been reading a great book by Brian Rafferty called Best Movie Year Ever. That's about the year 1999 and the movies that released this year, about how there were just a ton of major blockbusters and auteur films and stuff that really pushed the industry forward. And so we're kind of talking about maybe working through a lot of those too. Some things that I feel like I should have seen, some things I've seen a million times. And so, yeah, really just kind of talking about where these movies came from, what was important about them, what was important to us about them, what did work, what didn't work, where the story could go after the fact, again being the original idea, and lots of other stuff. And yes, this is happening on what would normally be a PWU night. In case you missed it, PWU is probably going to become more of a recurring special than a weekly show.
And that's because we like films more than we like wrestling.
I was about to say, because none of us give a shit about wrestling now.
More consistently, we are excited about what's happening at the movies, even if it's old time at the movies, than what's going on in the world of wrestling. So we're not jettisoning PWU, but...
It's taking a hiatus. It's taking a break right now. I've been wanting to do a movie show forever, and this is, we talk about movies a lot, especially if you tune into Horse Time. If you turn into Horse Time, more often than not, it's us talking about films. So we decided to just turn it into a show. In fact, that is just part of the roadmap to what will become an all-new Podzilla 1985, which we don't want to say too much, but we talked about it a couple years ago about retooling it and doing some new things. Myself and Tanner and Kaz and Hunter last night were talking about this in Xbox while we played Diablo, and we came up with some great ideas, and we're very excited about where we're going with it. But tomorrow's kind of the start of it with an all new show, and then there will be more exciting things to talk about in the future. So stay tuned to tomorrow. It's going to be a good time. And then Thursday, of course, it's After Dark. Lindsay's going to have a top five for us. It's going to be quick, Aaron Powell. It's going to be fast. And then we'll see what happens.
Don't listen to his lies.
I threw it in the chat, but that's immediately what I heard when Shannon talked about retooling. It's all new, all different PZ85.
It's going to be hot.
It's going to be hot. Hot.
I don't know why, but my mind goes to that bit from, is the Spider-Man 2 or 3? The it's here, it's now, it's wow, and how. Yeah, exactly. JJ's like, that's terrible.
How do you like us now?
And more that sound effects.
Tobey Maguire was saying as he was gyrating on the streets for Spider-Man 3. Yes.
Oh, and shit, I don't know how much we want to give away right now, but we also this week have started setting in motion. We promised we were doing it, and we're doing it. Coming this October, Howl's Eve Tale Season 2. It's coming back.
What are you talking about there? I don't know what you mean. We didn't have a meeting about it. No.
No, we didn't literally have an actual meeting.
We didn't have a meeting until it was discussed. This is interrupted by Shane and Sean.
Perhaps I will propose a different show called The Nightmares of ChatGPT and just throw it a prompt and just...
Oh, we...
Okay, we've got an idea. Kaz, we got to talk about that. Yeah, you're going to love it. Yeah. You're going to fucking love it.
Ooh, great minds think alike. Look at that.
But yep. Halloween Tales Season 2, just like last year, every Monday in October, which means 5 new episodes. We've started working on the overarching story, some individual stories. It's going to be great. It's everything we did last year, but better. And in addition to that, I don't think I told anybody this, so I'll break it here. I am, for the first time since last December, working on a new episode of The Inquest.
No, I knew about it.
Ooh, yes.
Yep.
I
didn't
know shit
on it yesterday.
Yeah, I ain't no shit. I ain't no fucking shit.
I didn't write shit. Since December, I haven't written anything. I've been very, very busy, and I'm going to be very busy in the future. I'm putting more on my plate probably than I should, but I'm doing it anyway. I had a little bit of inspiration. See, Shannon, when these shows sneak up on you, it's not from the front where you expect. It's more like from the sides.
Oh, from the two ideas you didn't see coming. I already, yep. So. I smell what Dwayne's cooking, AEW.
They're going to get sued.
But point is, Cody, and I will say this now. Probably next week or the week after, maybe the Thursday show, one of the shows is going to basically be a, what would you call it? Almost like a team meeting between us and the fans talking about our new vision for PZ85 because this is the wrong show to do it because the people that are listening to this show don't give a shit about my personal life. So I'm going to save it for tomorrow. Tomorrow, I'm going to have, we're going to talk about all the changes in my life and why all this is happening. But that's tomorrow. No, that's Thursday on an all new pro wrestling. On an all new Saturday After Dark. It's not.
So what you're saying is After Dark this week, I don't have to pick a topic and we're just going to do general.
Oh, yeah, you do.
No, you got to pick a topic. Yeah.
You still got to do that.
All right, that's it, Cody. Take us out of here.
Don't worry. Next week with another episode of PZ85 Plays The Curse of Strahd, if we're being rebooted, I might need to find someone else to fill this spot. It's like Miss Marvel or Captain Marvel.
No.
I'll be out. Someone else will be in.
No, you're still here.
Do different powers.
You're still it. You're the Ezra Miller of the DCU. Like, everybody else is gone, but you're still here.
It's time for me to quit.
Well, I didn't mean it that way.
I almost totally forgot one more thing before we get out of here because this broke like last week and we haven't had a show since then. We're going to Comic-Con. We haven't fucking talked about this at all on the podcast.
That's true.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you sure are.
Comic-Con.
You fucking
are too, damn it.
Only one of us gets to play that card and it might be me.
It's Comic-Con and Cape is 3 days, September 29th through October 1st, Friday over the weekend, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. They have asked us to be part of their podcast lounge. We are doing not one but two shows on two different days. It's yet to be decided which days those will be, but we'll let you know as soon as we can. It'll likely be either Friday and Saturday or Saturday and Sunday, but we're going to do a live edition of this show, PZ85 Plays. It will not be Curse of Strahd because we only have an hour, so putting together a very short, like one sheet, one shot thing that we can do there. And for the first time also in a long time, I think since... Oh my God! Was it me and Cody?
It was Bond in Indiana. I'm pretty
Bond
sure.
And Jones.
Since Bond in Indiana Jones. So this is over a year now. For the first time in over a year, we're going to do not only a new episode of Arguably Entertaining, but a live episode of Arguably Entertaining. We have not decided on the debate topic for that yet.
I bombed so hard as judge that the show got canceled.
No, you didn't. No, that was a great show. It's one of those things that is sometimes very, very hard. To put together depending on how intense and serious you want to get into it. And Cody and I went very hard.
And I appreciated that.
It was a lot of fun. So that's going to be happening there too. While it's not something we do all the time, I think it's a good way of getting people into who we are and our personalities and that kind of thing. So once we know who's participating and what topics and all that, we'll let you know. But Cape Comic-Con, the tickets are on sale now at the, what is it, like Cape-Events?
It's capeevents.com,
www.cape-events.com.
There you go. Get those now. Do it now. We'll see. Yeah. We'll be there, and we'll let you know more when we get closer.
Yeah.
Shannon's doing it. Yeah. Not that.
Not that, though. Yeah. Cut that.
Cut that.
That's all.
That's it.
All right, cool. Bye. Bye. Fuck the outros. There you go. That's it. For Cass, no, you for Double H, for Lindsay, for Shannon, for Mr. Almost appearing in this picture, I am Cody Sandusky. Thank you so much for tuning in for another episode of PZ85 Plays A Curse of Strahd. Next week, danger is afoot, and armies may or may not be making their way to meet our compatriots in Barovia. Good luck.